So tonight's talk, as I said, is about the hindrances. Called it Hello Hindrance. and I was just sitting here settling myself before I started this talk, and I was just allowing myself to feel into the refuge of this beautiful trees and the forest and the earth, and just allowing that to feel a little bit of anxiety settle in my body. And it just occurred to me as I was doing that these sort of hindrances really describe the way that us humans get entangled. It's one of the ways these hindrances, which I'll describe further, are really ways that we get caught up in this combination of physical, mental, emotional states that really hinders our capacity to see clearly, to act wisely. And they're a wonderful juice to explore on our retreats. So as we settle into this practice, as we settle into this retreat, we start to gather our attention. We may start to notice we open to moments or periods of easeful abiding. As the attention gathers, we can develop a certain level of calm. We might feel more connected with nature, the sounds, the smells, the sights. There might be moments of easeful presence in the body. There might be a resulting joy or gratitude that arises. And some of you have spoken of that today in the groups. You know, in our practice, it is so important to notice, appreciate, allow, deepen, sustain, and even savour the pleasant through the direct connection with our senses. Through our senses. And as well, however, almost, if not all of us, will be confronted with or meet some more difficult moments, some painful or absorbing preoccupations, maybe of resistance, of not wanting, of discomfort in the body, of less pleasant experiences, and our inner reactivity to those. And it's these difficult, reactive mind states and preoccupations I'll talk more to tonight. In order to understand the difficult mental qualities, the Buddha grouped the most common and tenacious of these that he experienced in himself all those years ago and saw in others into what has been named the five hindrances of desire, aversion, sloth and torpor, you consider as one hindrance, restlessness and worry, and doubt. And we've already talked to these a little during the retreat and we'll probably continue to. The first two hindrances, desire and ill will, are forms of wanting, albeit in opposing ways. So desire wants to have. Wanting to have, whereas ill will, aversion, wants to push away. So it wants to push away. Desire wants to have, aversion, ill will wants to push away. The third and fourth hindrances involve opposing levels of energy or vitality. So sloth and torpor, as you can imagine, are the low energy states, while restlessness and worry, high energy states. And the fifth hindrance, doubt, is not specifically connected with any of the other hindrances, so it's on its own rather than a pair. Or is it distinguished into mental or physical aspects? And this is because doubt is often entwined with a combination of the other hindrances and can affect both the body and the mind. And I'll talk more to that later. Just to start with, I really want to make sure that these hindrances are really normalised, realise that we all have them and they're frequent, or they can be frequent. You know, some people may not be experiencing any hindrance in this moment, may not have experienced any hindrances today, but many might have as well. So I thought, I was just reflecting for myself on what hindrances have paid a visit today, and certainly there's been restlessness and some sloth and torpor. Partly it's just delightful to say that, isn't it? Sloth and torpor. But certainly sloth and torpor. In fact, I was saying to Jill, in fact, it was yesterday this moment happened when I had been doing some work I had to do upstairs up in my room, and I was feeling energised. It was in the after lunch session. I thought, oh, I'm feeling great. I'll just get out this hindrance talk and do some work on it. Instantly, sloth and torpor. A complete reaction. Anyway, so maybe you could have a hands up. I might be able to see some silhouettes of arms. So who perhaps has had some desire since they've been on retreat? Anyone experience any desire? Yep, okay, that's pretty common. And what about aversion? Aversion or will? Yep, okay, yep. good take, good to see. The restlessness in worry? Yep, good. I'm not getting too alone here, this is great. Very helpful for me. Sloth and torpor. Okay, yep. Sleepiness, sloth and torpor as the hindrances. And doubt. Okay, great. Good to see some great proud acknowledging. I die, and I too have had some hindrances. Good, I've been visited by the hindrances. Great. So it's pretty clear that these aren't just happening to me. They're not just happening to us, these hindrances. They're pretty much universal, and they arise whether we're new to this practice or if we're more of an old-timer. I noticed this person here next to me had her hand up a few times, I noticed. You know, we're in this together. And, you know, sometimes we can feel a bit shy about our less glamorous reactions and place of stickiness. As one Tibetan teacher says, the practice of meditation is one insult after another. And it's also helpful to reflect on what is happening when we become aware of these difficult states? Sometimes we feel as though we're doing fine, and then we came on retreat. At home, you know, maybe aware of a little bit of restlessness, but we off go for a walk or a run off to the gym. Maybe get a bit of tiredness or a bit of sloth, and we tune out for a while. A bit of resistance, and we distract ourselves. But when we commit to a retreat and when we intentionally bring our attention to the body and the mind, we notice what is happening and get to know these more difficult mind states. And it can feel like they're worse on retreat. But actually that is often just that we're seeing them, experiencing them more directly as we sit stationary and bring the intention to see what is present or arises in the body and the mind. Now, the patterns are not different to the mind states that might torment or tantalise us in daily life. But here on retreat, we don't distract away from them so much or get propelled into action by them so much through opportunity to understand them. Uta Jeneer often used to refer to retreats being a training camp. You know, this is a training camp around learning about the hindrances. And we may not recognise them as hindrances in daily life. We might more recognise them as aspects of patterns of anxiety or ruminating or being a bit agitated or a bit foggy-brained or a bit dithery or a bit preoccupied or a bit fantasising. We may notice them in some of the ways of our speech or behaviour, activities that come out of these patterns. Maybe we notice we're a bit jealous, a little bit snappy, might be a bit dismissive or a bit resentful. We might isolate ourselves and go to bed. And we might distract ourselves through being busy or through substances or through our phones, our electronic devices. And it's also important to recognise that these patterns of mind and these patterns of the hindrances can have deep roots of conditioning and the tendencies of the mind and the behavioural patterns. We're all wired a bit differently. And the conditioning can really stem right from our early childhood, the way we're in our families, the subconscious ideas we took on about how we need to be loved, even for conditional love, to feel safe, to feel a sense of worth, to feel value, to feel a sense of belonging. Maybe some ideas we took on about being some fundamentally flawed in some way, not being inadequate. We all have different conditions in our childhood and our family and our family systems. And then, of course, there's the lifelong experiences we all have, events that happen through our lives that also affect us deeply. And then the current conditions. So I'm not saying on retreat that we want to be looking back and working out our lifelong patterns or sort of psychoanalyzing ourselves. Instead, the gem and the precious opportunity here on retreat is to be interested in how these patterns present in the present moment. Getting really familiar with them so we can recognize them more easily. To see the conditions here and now that contributed to their arising and hopefully to their passing. And while they may present slightly differently for each of us, there is a universality about these experiences, their impersonal nature. We cannot control them. They do not arise because I decided I was going to be restless, or I am restless. We didn't will them into place. And we can't actually stop them from arising either, just by willing them out by some sense of control. We're not bad because we have them. And they're not sort of something innately about me, which is often what we want to do. We want to identify around them. There are causes and conditions that led to their rising. And this therefore also gives us the opportunity to work with them. And we can develop our capacity to be patient around their arising, their presence, and cultivate an interest in them, the conditions here and now that led to their arising. So I want to consider a bit more why actually we want to work with these difficult states, these difficult mental states. You know, sometimes when we think about our meditation path, or maybe what motivates us to go on a meditation path, it might be more considering the sort of special meditation experiences that may be available to us. Some of the deep concentration, the absorptions, the insights. Now, Vibeka Anālio says, progress in the Satipatthana meditation is not just about having special experiences. Special experiences certainly have their place, but they are not the goal itself. The goal is rather inner transformation. Even the experience of an absorption or a stage of awakening has its true value in the extent to which it produces lasting inner transformation. Meditation should result in an improvement in the way we are, how we relate to others, and how we deal with outer circumstances. Such internal changes are more important than appropriating spectacular experiences as markers of our meditative expertise. He says, the question is whether our ability to face difficulties and handle problems improves. Patience and understanding, as well as a gradual opening of the heart and a willingness to reach out to others, are important signposts. So reducing the impact of these hindrances and how we face difficulties and handle problems. I'm really looking to lessen the impacts of the reactive mind states and the impact that has on our lives and our relationships. And there's plenty of reasons to be motivated around this. Life's difficulties, unfortunately, aren't likely to reduce. And external conditions are likely to become increasingly challenging. This can be just from our aging process, the impact of the aging body and mind on our physical and cognitive health. Immensely challenging. But also the global crises, around the climate, you know, the extreme weather events we've been seeing recently with the atmospheric river discharging itself all over Nelson and Marlborough and up here in Northland. And the additional stresses these events bring, you know, locally, internationally, food and resource insecurity, competition for resources, ecological destruction, wars, polarity between and within nations and communities. The external conditions aren't getting any easier here on our precious planet. And the more that we can recognise the mental states that hinder our own clear seeing and opening hearts, and learn to release and reduce the rising, the less we will suffer when facing these difficulties. And the more we can be wise, kind, and available to others, and to proactively attend to the world. So we can take an interest in these activities of the mind, these habitual reactivity that keeps us in bondage, limited, contracted, and relatively unavailable. I see Gil Fronsdal recently ran a retreat, I think it was for a similar length of this one, just on the hindrances. I don't think I would have signed up, but incredibly useful. And I heard him say in a talk how useful people found this. And he says that Vipassana practice, or insight practice, especially in the early periods of one practice, is a kind of de facto study to get a PhD in the hindrances, to really understand them, to see them coming, to be able to recognise them, and to know how to work with them. So perhaps tonight we can start our diploma or something. It's important to recognise that the presence of these hindrances themselves is not the issue. Much as other experiences that give rise to an unpleasant feeling tone, they're not a problem in themselves. The difficulties arise when we react and get caught up in them. If we get lost in these hindrances, we start identifying with them. Our sense of self arises in relation to them. You know, we can start to get that sense of contracting and solidifying around them, creating some concrete idea of who I am. I am anxious. I am not good enough to do this. And so on. But if we can see these sometimes tenacious mind states as just that, mind states, then we don't need to grab hold of them as me or mine. Joseph Goldstein reminds us that the mind state is not the problem. They don't need to hinder clear seeing. Can just get to see them for what they are, empty phenomena rolling on in the landscape of our mind. The retreat is such a good opportunity to get to know these hindrances, whether we like it or not, and a great training ground, as I've said. It can be a bit like a pressure cooker, as we continually encourage to be with the experience that is present. And it's really important to remember we're practicing for the long game here, and how we bring our attention to the difficulties as they arise in each moment right now. How we bring that attention will affect the very next moment and support us in future moments. And this is all part of the crucial part of the waking up process. So I'll read one of the set of similes that the Buddha used to describe these hindrances. These are as described by Bhikkhu Anālaya. This first set of similes illustrates the effect of each hindrance through the image of a bowl filled with water and used as a mirror in order to look at the reflection of one's face. According to the similes, the effect of sensual desire is similar to water mixed with dye. Aversion resembles water heated to the boil. Sloth and torpor is compared to water overgrown with algae. And doubt is like dark and muddy water. In all five cases, one is unable to see one's reflections properly in the water. These similes vividly illustrate the individual character of each hindrance. Sensual desire colours one's perception, that die in the water, colours one's perception. Because of aversion, one gets heated. Sloth and torpor result in stagnation, and hence the algae. Through restlessness and worry, one is tossed about like water stirred by wind. And doubt obscures, you know, the dark and muddy water. There can be helpful similes when we're getting to recognise the hindrances, or when we're caught in a hindrance and we're starting to understand it and feel it, the impact on the mind and the impact on the body. So I'll talk now a little to more to each of the hindrances, and then talk to some of the ways that we can work with them in our practice. So desire, or sensual desire. This quality of desire has this quality of leaning, of wanting to have. And the desire here, it's not the desire itself, but it's the preoccupation with the desire when it becomes a hindrance. And we get preoccupied by this desire, by this movement towards, by this wanting to have. Sometimes an experience of tightening around something that we want, or wanting something that's just other than what is present, being pulled in, grasping. Maybe that sense, I'll be happy when, or I need something, I want something. Wanting more or something different from what's present right now. And of course we all know that, yes, there may be some sense of temporary happiness, or sometimes actually just a pleasant sense of relief from not desiring anymore, so when we get what it is that we want. But it doesn't last. And we notice we're leaning into grasping after something else. In the Calvin and Hobbes cartoon, with Calvin looking on the ground and saying, look, a quarter. Wow, I'm rich beyond my dreams. I can have anything I want. All my prayers have been answered. And then he stands there for a minute and says, maybe there's more. And desire is such a part of our cultural marinade. The advertising sector spends a lot of time making us feel as if we're not good enough and tempting us with products to make us feel good enough or pretty enough or fit enough, as well as telling us if we only buy this or that, we'll be happier, we'll be more attractive, we'll be more entertained, more successful, and so on. The sector often works to stimulate desire. I'll be happy when I have that trip to that exotic destination, when I drive that car, when I taste that food. It's really pulling on our desire. I laughed when, just not long before the retreat, I was thinking about this talk, and I was turned the telly on to watch the news. It's like an old-fashioned thing to do. And just before that, TV, there was an advertisement that said something about feeling stressed, feeling preoccupied, overburdened, overwhelmed. And what you need was a full-sized massage chair. Massive massage chair. And it went on for about one of those terrible ads that goes on for 5 minutes or something, rather telling you about how I'd be such a wonderful, happy, relaxed, peaceful, calm. Many of the things we aspire for here, peace, calm, spacious. So sorry if you ended up here instead. The massage chair. And it takes some honest reflection and restraint to realise that our individual happiness is not dependent on always getting what we want. which is what this preoccupation and desire often tells us. And it also takes some honest reflection, and it's becoming increasingly blatantly clear the wider implication of a society that follows desire to the point of greed. When there is that singular focus on getting what we want, of chasing that, of trying to fulfill that, in isolation of how that affects our communities, our land, our water, and our air, it's making our planet increasingly uninhabitable for many species of plant and animals, including our very own species, human beings. So again, there's even more good reason to understand desire in the heart and the mind, how it affects our clarity, our actions, and that of other beings, and the lives of other beings. So there's the desire, and then there's aversion, the form of wanting to push away. So that wanting again, but wanting to push away. Take that form of resistance, hatred, any form of pushing away experience, judgment of ourselves, judgment of others, criticism, the inner critic and reacting to this inner critic, believing in it and reacting to it. You know, not allowing the free flow of the felt sense of the emotion of anger that might come through the body more easily. And so there's a tightening around it, a narrowing, a reacting to, a resisting. And it is really important to realise that emotions are not hindrances. Sometimes we can get some confusion around that, especially when we're talking about aversion and ill will. But often anger is associated with that. But anger itself doesn't need to be a hindrance. Anger is an emotion that moves through us, physiological and some mental association, but an emotion that can move through us. If we can allow that, it doesn't need to be a hindrance. It's more when it's like the water heated to the boil, and there's that resistance, and it's just heating and heating and heating. Utej Dhaneer says, when we observe aversion or other hindrances, it is often from a point of view that it is an enemy to be fought. That is already a battle lost. Aversion likes it when you fight, because fighting itself is an aversion. And so then there's sloth and torpor, the water overgrown with algae, these low energy states. Can be experienced as dullness and tiredness, sleepy, sinking sort of states, sort of dragged into inertia, maybe a cotton wool mind, foggy, soupy, sort of bored state maybe, low energy. And it can take some faith to stay present with this. It's been quite hard to stay with this state and to be curious about this state. We sort of slide on off it. And there can be a general habit of humans to cut off from experience, not to stay awake. And this practice is about staying awake, being curious, being interested, caring about our experience, investigating the experience. And as we'll talk, sometimes the sleepiness, some of these things I've been describing, are actually just our physical need to take rest or to sleep. You know, when we've been busy in our lives, when we're unwell, when we've had big things going on in our lives, we often need more rest. And it's really important to listen to this. Really important. And if you find it hard to consider that as a possibility, I really encourage you to explore that just as an option, to take more rest and to see what happens. Sometimes we're really resistant to doing that, as Jill has talked about. And also sometimes this sloth and torpor can be a strong habit of mind. It can be sort of a bit of a strategy, a defence against pain or against overwhelm. We just tend to shut down. You know, and if repeated, then this can sort of become numb, sort of like a dull coating over experience. And on a retreat, sometimes we get to look at that. We get to look at, to wake up to the issues we haven't dealt with if we really want to live our lives fully. And also on retreat, we can particularly notice when the sloth and torpor is resistant to something that is arising in the present moment, not necessarily pleasant moment. You know, it might be an emotional thing arising. We just want to be curious, what's going on? Is this something I don't want to be with, something I don't want to feel? It'd be a strategy for the mind to not deal with what's going on. And clearly what happened to me yesterday when I wasn't wanting to do this talk. And then we've got restlessness and worry, these high energy states. You may experience as a busy, restless mind and agitated energy in the body. Have that sense of jumpiness or irritability. I had a lot of restlessness in my earlier retreats, and I used to think it would be impossible to actually stay on my cushion during the sitting. It's just that real jumpy sort of energy. Very hard to do an out-breath, just want to jump back up again. Restlessness. And there's thoughts and sensations, and it's a complex mind state and difficult to be with. It's unpleasant, and it's quite often coupled with aversion. The mind is scattered, unfocused, the future and past thoughts, the mind trying to solve unfinished business. Someone described it as like a fish flapping on the shore. And all this similar, that simile of the Buddha, the bowl of water stirred by the wind, rippling, swirling, churned into wavelets. It can also be useful to check if we're not being too pushy with ourselves. Really pushing ourselves too hard, driving ourselves, striving, putting in too much effort can really increase tension and with it, restlessness. And then the fifth hindrance, the hindrance of doubt. And there can be both sceptical doubt, like this practice is no good, this is a waste of time, be better off doing something else, or more personal doubt. I'm no good at this. I'm not good enough. It can be a familiar pattern for some of us to doubt ourselves. And again, it can have roots in our family or attachment relationships or in our culture. And also it can be really common in forms of oppression of immigrants or minorities or others who are treated badly and led to believe that they really aren't good enough. All the surrounding culture is telling them that they're not good enough. Really cause doubt, really impact the mind and the heart and how we are in the world. And sometimes we can doubt ourselves in this practice if we hear about some lofty goal of insight and clarity and various qualities of the heart that seem a long way from us. And it's important to realise that a mountain is climbed one step at a time, that this is a gradual path, that we don't need to be thinking that we need to be way over there sometime and that's way beyond where we can get to. This path is a gradual path. One breath at a time. One practice at a time. And so I'll finish the talk off by talking a little about how to work with the hindrances. And Gil Fronsdal's come up with a lovely acronym. Acronyms are quite helpful. Especially when we're caught in hindrances, it can be really hard to know what to do. It's hard enough to know that we're caught in a hindrance, but then to actually want some sort of map to help us with this territory we find ourselves in. Anyway, Gil Fronsdal came up with the word bella, which is the Italian word for beautiful. And he chose this word, I'm sure, because it worked, but also because when the hindrances are overcome and mindfulness is strong, the mind becomes beautiful. So bella. And when Gil Fronsdal says that when we practice with this bella, which I'll explain, the hindrances can become part of the practice and not a detour. We integrate it into our practice. So the B for bella stands to be with. The B to be with. To recognise, to acknowledge, you know, what's here now. Power of recognizing, letting be, but not needing to do anything. We can just see a little more clearly what's going on. And just in that act, it reduces how immersed we are. It can reduce the potential amplification in the mind, and the associated physiological responses that come with some of these hindrances. It allows us to step back rather than being so involved. And it can give us some sense of power or agency and just clearly recognizing, ah, this is a hindrance here, now. I've been surprised how profound that can feel. Just that recognizing, oh, this is doubt. Oh, oh yeah, desire. You know, just recognizing. Gil Fronsdal says, the practice of letting a hindrance be becomes most affected when combined with a clear recognition and acknowledgement of the hindrance. The clearer the recognition, the more we pull ourselves out of the gravitational force of the hindrance, and the greater is our freedom from it. Recognition also ensures our practice is honest and realistic. Sullivan, I like that gravitational force of the hindrance, isn't it? It's kind of like they suck us in. We really get caught up and entangled in them. There's a lovely description of someone in the group today who recognised aversion arising and recognised that something had happened, and they'd noticed the aversion and then noticed they were getting grumpy and then something else and something else, and they were noticing that this aversion was arising in them, and they were able to recognise it. Ah, aversion. You know, and we can recognise at that stage it's almost before it's really hindering us. Just starting to take hold. And in this case, they were just able to say, no, I'm not going that way. Analio says, several discourses beautifully illustrate the powerful effect of the simple act of recognition by describing how the tempter Mara, who often acts as the personification of the five hindrances, loses his power as soon as he is recognized. And often a quote used for the Buddha's, I see you, Mara. I see you, aversion. Yeah, beautiful. So the B Vela is to be with, and the E is to examine. So examining and exploring a hindrance is key. Recognizing and being with them are important, and we also need to understand them as well. As Gil Fronsdal explains, exploring the hindrance in and of itself involves recognizing the components of a hindrance. So this is the examining that we're doing. For example, it's physical, energetic, emotional, cognitive, and motivational aspects. You know, so just in saying that, it makes you realise what a sort of complex these hindrances can be. So for example, he says, strong desire may be experienced physically as a leaning forward, a tightening of the solar plexus, or a sense of lightness. Energetically, it might be a rushing or a lifting. Emotionally, it might involve pleasant emotions like delight or excitement or eagerness. Or it might be an effort to fix unpleasant emotions such as emptiness, loneliness, or fear. Cognitively, it may involve beliefs and stories that we tell ourselves. And motivationally, it may come as a strong impulse to act or to cling. He also says that noticing a hindrance absence is also important. The contrast between when it is absent and when it is present can help us to perceive the different aspects of the hindrance more clearly. Noticing its absence can also help reinforce a state of being free of hindrances. You know, so we might notice the physical difference of the leaning forward into desire, or when the desire is not there, and that sense of just being centered and grounded and more upright. We can look more carefully at how the body feels, and the mind and the emotions. What's this hindrance feel like right here, right now? You know, what is the energy of aversion like? So in that example, it's bringing us into the direct experience of it rather than going on into the stories and fueling it. It's really getting interested in it rather than being caught and so entangled within it. And once we start getting some cracks in these hindrances, when we start to disentangle a little, we can start to see what's underlying. The Buddhist word translated as hindrance literally means covering. This suggests we can examine what hindrances are masking. For example, and this isn't a comprehensive list, desire can cover loneliness. Ill will may conceal frustrated desire. Sloth and torpor can hide fear. Restlessness and worry may cover wanting approval. And doubt can mask a reluctance to commit. Uncovering what's underneath the hindrances is effective for overcoming them. So there's another aspect of examining the hindrance and perhaps what it is this hindrance is covering over. So the being with and the examining, and then the first of the L's is for lessen, as in reduce. Funny thing with a Kiwi accent, I'm not very good at differentiating between lesson and a lesson. Lesson, anyway, it's a detour. So we want to reduce the intensity of a hindrance, the preoccupation. And this can give us some more sense of power and agency. I was just telling Jill earlier today, I remember on a retreat with Shaila Catherine, who came to Southern Insight in the South Island probably in the early 2000s sometime. And she was talking about restlessness, which I was very familiar with. And she suggested really focusing on the out-breath and really taking time to relax the body. And I was so surprised that we were allowed to do that. I was full of this idea we just had to be with, that we couldn't actually actively understand what lessened the hindrance, what was actually helpful and beneficial for us. It's great. And sometimes with the intensity of a hindrance, it might mean we actually need to put our attention elsewhere for a while. We might need to go for a walk until it lessens and then bring the attention back. In the case of sleepiness or torpor, the lessening of the hindrance is actually to bring in more energy. So we might energise ourselves through more attention on the energising quality of our in-breath, or through our sitting posture, or maybe by standing up, bringing the energy into the body. Maybe opening the eyes, getting more light into the eyes. Or maybe bringing in a bit more investigation, bringing the mind a bit more energy, looking at the details of the breath or the body sensations. When there's a sense of overwhelm, it's very difficult to work with a hindrance. You know, we don't have the usual bandwidth or capacity. And so lessening the intensity can be very helpful. And it's also useful to note that if a hindrance is being particularly sticky and persistent for you, you know, while you're here on retreat, then it's certainly worth talking to the teachers about it. You know, sometimes when we're really caught and entangled, it can be really helpful to work with while we're on retreat with a teacher. So the first L is to lessen, and the second L is to let go. So once we realise that these hindrances aren't beneficial, that they're painful, that they increase our suffering, and once we understand the hindrance enough, once we've explored the hindrance, there can sometimes be the opportunity to let go. You know, sometimes this might be accomplished by letting go of the pressure that fuels the hindrance, you know, letting go of the story and the thinking that perpetuates it. We might let go of the attachment to any self-identity connected to the hindrance, the stories we believe about ourselves and the hindrance. Letting go of the story, especially for desire and aversion, is really useful. Or in the case of restlessness and sleepiness, letting go of avoidance and turning towards what's underlying can be particularly helpful. And the ability to let go of the hindrances grows with the practice. It can be a gradual path, but it's hugely beneficial for our practice on retreat and also in our daily lives. And so the final A of Vela is to appreciate the passing, the absence of the hindrances. And this truly supports and deeply nourishes our practice and our path. How does it feel in the body, in the mind? This absence of the hindrance. Maybe the absence of the contraction or the agitation or the fog or the tension, the agitated mind. And we can open again to the more subtle body sensations, the breath, the more subtle movements of the mind, maybe the warmth of the heart, the movements of the heart. Yeah, just as important as all these other aspects of working with the hindrances. So just finishing off, Gill says, to be mindful and present without being hijacked by the hindrances is a joy. The relief that arises when the mind is free of the hindrances is a delight. If you can feel the sense of well-being, you will know a type of pleasure that is better than sense pleasures, better than the energy of ill will. The mind will naturally want more freedom rather than losing freedom to the hindrances. Unhindered attention is a treasure. Unhindered attention is a treasure. It is what allows mindfulness to do its most penetrating work of liberation. When the mind is settled and freed of the hindrances, we can look more deeply into the functioning of the mind and discover the fullest possibility of liberation. So thank you for your attention. I'll sit for a moment.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.